Okay, I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
Thanks for being here today. And I have a sobriety date of July 23rd, 1982. And by the grace of God, I've been sober for 41 years this last July. All I can really say, just even being here, is I really love being sober. This has been the best thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and my dad didn't drink so much, but he was pretty much possessed with anger. And so I grew up, I was really scared of him most of my life. And as a child, I was scared of him. His bellowing yell. And I don't know why he never learned to not yell, but he didn't. Anyhow, I had two older brothers. You know, it's really funny. I have two older brothers. One was born into my family, but the other one, when I think about how badly I felt about my parents, I thought they always, did everything wrong. My eldest one was adopted by our family when he was probably 10, because his parents were killed in a car accident. And he came to live in my family, and my mom and dad opened their hearts and their home to somebody that probably, they didn't have to do that. And that gives me insight today of how generous they really were. And of course, I wasn't looking at that. I heard somebody say recently that we take all of our parents' deficiencies and we live them out until we learn how to love who they were, or so we can love who we are. And I did do that. I acted a lot on all the stuff I saw them do that I didn't like, and I would criticize them about it. I was actually doing myself. Until I learned, you go through some stuff and you get sober, and you have to go backwards before you go forwards. At least I was bringing a lot of my old stuff forward. But anyhow, I started to drink at the age of 12. My mom won a bottle of champagne at a fashion show, and she put it on the dining room table, and we had a big pink pom-pom on it, and I took it, and I took the pom-pom off, and I took it next door to my best friend who lived next door, and I drank the whole thing. And I was extremely sick. Well, we probably did share it, but anyhow, the next day came back, and my dad asked me, "Hey, where's that bottle of liquor that was on the dining room table?" And I said, "I have no idea." And that was kind of a theme of how I drank. I lied. I didn't tell the truth ever, especially if it wasn't convenient for me. And it was rarely convenient for me to tell the truth. The problem was I never remembered all the series of lies that I did. And I always, always, always got sick. Always. I always got sick. I was a kid that I came into this world. I hated who I was. I didn't like anything about me. I had so much, I was so shy and afraid of everybody and everything, and so afraid of the world. I had two younger sisters, and there were three of us born in 3 years, and I had them. You'd think being the oldest girl, I would be the leader, but it wasn't that way. I had them do everything for me, and we stuck together just like that. And they knew that about me. I couldn't dial the phone. If I was trying to call a friend, they had to do it for me, and they did. I just never stepped out of the victim role almost, and childlike behavior all the time. And I brought that with me. I just had it, and I still have that side inside of me today. But I started drinking, and I drank continuously every single day. And don't get me wrong, I didn't just use alcohol. I supplemented it with a lot of stuff that I had. My brother was, one of my brothers was a member of the Hells Angels, so he came home with a lot of pot and stuff like that. So we just, I just did whatever I could. I decided, to go to college, and I went in the healthcare profession, and I almost flunked out. I couldn't go to school one day, and if you missed any days, you were out of the program I was in. It was it. you're gone. And I missed a day, and they told me I was out. And I don't even know how I did it today, but I finagled my way back in again. But that was a direct result of my drinking. I almost didn't get to become what I am, a nurse. I learned early on, and I don't know if anybody else learned it early on in AA, that you weren't supposed to talk about what your profession was. And I really think the reason was so that nobody felt bad if they didn't have an opportunity to go to school, because our job is not to make anybody feel bad, is that we're all one among many. But anyhow, I did go to school and I became a nurse. And I drank and took lots of drugs. You know, I give you one and I took two for me. And that's my truth. I really did do that. I wasn't, you know, I just needed to have them because I felt so, I hated who I was so much that I needed. I lived completely in my feelings. And in my own thoughts and my own belief system, that's where I lived. I never learned that maybe that area wasn't correct, that maybe it wasn't the right way to believe, you know, be. So I continued to do that for a while. I got married and, oh God, that was, that poor man. I think I was a hot mess all the time. And I thought he was supposed to fix me. You know, just fix me. I'm here, fix me. And do me, carry me, and you know, it's all that whole thing. And I lived like that. And oh God, it's embarrassing to think back how it was, but that's how it was for me. And I took a lot of drugs, and he never even knew it. I hid it so well that I think he knew my behavior was bad, but I did hide it a lot, all the time. I hid it. I hid lots of stuff. So I got pregnant and had a baby, and I continued doing a lot of that stuff. I took a lot of stuff when I was pregnant with my first son. And then that's my reality. And I used to be so full of shame about not sharing that, but I really don't believe today that I'm the only one that did things like that. That's what I did. I did a lot of stuff like that. I at one time when I was employed in San Francisco at a doctor's office, I stole a prescription pad. And I took it to a pharmacy, but I didn't have the guts to take it in and try to pass it. I had my younger sister try to do it. And I mean, that's how sick I was. I was really, really sick. And you know, I was really, really sick, and I also could really, really deny I had a problem. It was never my fault about anything, you know? And I think back, I would go in open houses, and this was way back in the 70s, and I would go in the in their bathrooms in the open houses, and I go in through their drug cabinets, and you remember those little drug cabinets, and go in and find things and just throw up my purse. And I did a lot of things that are very unacceptable behavior and really sick, and still being able to con myself that I did not have a problem. It was you. Mm-hmm. However, you know, it wasn't me. So, and I pretended a lot. You know, the house I grew up in, we didn't talk about anything really at all. No, we didn't talk about anything. We never talked about how you felt. If you were feeling bad, or I cried all the time, just go to bed and you'll feel better in the morning. That was my mom's answer. And I you know, I don't fault her for that. She didn't know how to do it any better. And she was also drinking a lot at that time. But anyhow, when I was about 18 or so, my mom came into Alcoholics Anonymous and she got sober. And everything kind of was shifted at home and it got a lot better. But of course, I still hated them all. That's why I got married, is I just had to get away from them. And of course, I took myself with me. After I had this second baby, and I like to think that I was a somewhat decent mom, but really, if really I'm honest, no. I was absent. I could hardly wait to put him to bed so I could do what I wanted to do. And I really, really remember that. Hardly wait to get him to bed so I could go have a drink and go to to do whatever I wanted to do. My husband was working shift work, so it was fairly easy to get a babysitter and do what I wanted to do. And so I really don't call that a great mom, you know? I showed up, I didn't show up a lot of times. I disappeared and went off and did what I wanted to do. And I know it sounds, you know, I did some things good. I did do some things good, but I did a lot of things that weren't so good. I wanted to have another child. So by this time, my drinking had really escalated. I crashed the car, and my husband and I were fighting a lot right in front of that kid. Child abuse right there. We're fighting a lot, and my mom knew. I knew she knew what was going on. Anyhow, she took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was somewhere in the time, and I can't even I can't remember exact of it, but it was somewhere in the time that I got pregnant, and I knew I was pregnant, and I was going to have a baby. But she took me to my first meeting of AA, and that's kind of when my life kind of opened up and it started. You know, you guys were so nice. You were really nice to me, because this person that hated herself so much, I walked in and I was introduced to different people, and when they remembered my name, and I felt so invisible that I didn't have a right to even walk on the face of the earth. And you guys gave me the power to feel like, wow, I do exist, and you see me, and I'm not really, maybe I did still, that feeling of badness has taken a long time to go away. And drinking really helped it go away. It really did, because it put me somewhere else, you know. I could behave differently. But I know that my disease today is about how I felt. It just was how I was born. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed sober. Then that was my date of sobriety, July 23rd, 1982. But I definitely did not do everything correctly and everything right. You know, it has taken me years and years and years and years to grow up and act like an adult woman in all my affairs. That's just my truth. It's slow sobriety. It's a long haul. But I didn't understand that in the beginning. I thought if you just worked the steps that everything would be better. And that's not how it works. At least it's not how it worked for me. And it's not how it still works for me. It takes me a long time to process through things and walk through things. And I have had to learn how to feel the feelings and then go forward. I can't just magically think that feelings are going to go away and my bad behavior will stop. Anyhow, it took me a little time to get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor, and she helped me go through the steps. I know to this day that I'm powerless over alcohol. I know it. It's right here. I know. I have never forgotten the feeling, and I have never forgotten how bad it was for me. It was so, so bad. And it wasn't that I was in jail. I didn't go to a treatment center. I didn't have to kill anyone by drunk driving. You know, the meeting I went to last night, the speaker meeting in Pleasant Hill, the guy had killed somebody. And I thank you, God, that I didn't have to do that. But my insides were just as bad. I related to him so much because I felt as bad as he felt. You know, that feeling inside of ourselves where we're just, I have no value and no worth. Anyhow, that's where I was, and I never ever want to go back to that place again. Never. That's why this you guys, you were it for me. You're everything to me. You taught me how to live. She taught me, you know, I knew I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable. She had me write down about all the ways that my life was unmanageable, and it really was unmanageable. And it can still be unmanageable today. It really can. I don't do quite the same things, but my head can be unmanageable today. You know, I forget to bring in God into my stuff. The second step is my insanity. I was totally insane. I was driving drunk. That's insane. Absolutely insane. It's insane when you don't behave yourself. It's insane when you don't pay your bills. It's insane when you're trying to smoke or snort cocaine and your husband's in the next room. That's insane behavior. I did so many things that were insane. And I understood that, and with God's help, you know, I don't have to beat myself up about that anymore. The third step is really God either is or isn't, and what's my choice today? And my choice is hands down, it's all about God. And the fourth step, I did the first four steps to the best of my ability. I have since done many more four steps with different sponsors, and that's been really good for me. You know, you always learn different things from different people. I've learned different things about myself just by working closely with other women. And they bring their truth to me, and I can give them my truth. And, you know, it's not much about telling each other all the bad stuff. It's about encouraging and lifting each other up. And step 6 and 7 is she had me write down how I really felt about myself. And I felt that I had no value and no worth, and that is the place I go every time things are kind of bad with me. I have no value and no worth. What's the use? Instead of looking at myself as a valuable human being, I have no value. And then I would act it out. So she saw, I really think this is so true, is the seventh step is about, for me, she said, go out and do something for somebody else every single day and don't be found out. And if you are found out, it doesn't count. Because my biggest defect of character is all about me. It's how I feel. Oh my God, you hurt my feelings. That's always where I always went. My feelings were so wounded. You know, you hurt my dad hurt my feelings, my mom, and then everything about it. And if I'm, it just taught me so much about this is really about me and what I can do to make things better for other people instead of just focusing on me, just me. Anyhow, I still practice that to the best of my ability to this day because she was wonderful, wonderful woman. And 8 and 9, you know, that list, you know, there are many people I have probably forgotten to put on that list and they have come up. And when they come up, I try to do it. But most of my amends today are living amends. I really have to work on trying to change my behavior and being kind and not taking things personally because it's not all about me. You are, have your right. I know where my lane is and I visually see this in my mind. I know where I'm going. I really do. I know where I'm going and I'm not off the path of AA. I know my answers are all in this book. Every single one, this is a design for living. You know how you read On Awakening, and when we retire at night, and during the day we pause. And she taught me about doing that every single day. And if I follow that path, I'll have a good life. And anyhow, 10 is the making amends, you know. Well, 10, 11, and 12, they go together for me like a circle. I treat you the way I feel about me, and I feel about me the way I let God into my life. And that has been what works for me. God enters into my life, and as much as God enters into my life, you know, I feel good by myself. When I'm disconnected from God, the God thing has been a big thing for me. I have a totally different God than when I got here. And if you're new or somewhat new or whatever, it has taken me years and years to develop a God that I totally trust. I can say I love God, and that's cool, but that's still me being in charge because I'm a control freak and I am in charge. No, I had to stand back and sit back and let God love me. And that means God loves me through other people. I have to open up and I have to share myself and I have to, you know, do what I have to do. You know, I have to continue to serve and do as much. I can't afford to take that path if it's all about me anymore. I saw where it took me, and I never want to go back there again. Anyhow, I went through the steps. That was the most meaningful time I went through the steps was the first time with her, because I think your first sponsor is always just magical. Somebody that you love, you know. While we were going through the, I guess maybe we finished them. Anyhow, the marriage I was living in sucked. It really wasn't so good. And I wasn't so good about it either. But there was some physical abuse. And, you know, I continued to stay. And I realized today that I was calling that in. I was staying instead of getting up and walking away from people. I think we have a responsibility to ourselves and to Alcoholics Anonymous to, if somebody's mistreating you, you don't just put up with it and, you know, oh, pray it away. Because I tried that. No, we don't do that. We have to take the proper steps and do that. But she kind of cornered me on it and said, Kathy, if you stay there, I will always be your friend. I'll love you to death, because I knew she loved me. But I won't sponsor you anymore. And I was like, oh, God, you know, she was like my person. So I left. I left the next day. And, you know, I've never done that with anybody working with them, but it worked for me. It really did work for me. And I left, and I continued to grow and get better. That was a really difficult time because, you know, you have to depend on your faith to get you through. And those children I have, they were teenagers almost by then. And they were angry. And but the flip side was that, you know, they weren't so nice when I was there. So I had to accept that, you know. They haven't spoken to me since then, and I got divorced in 1996. But the trip is, I have not had to take a drink over it, and I have not had to get even. And I think that if I hadn't been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never would have learned that. I would have tried to get even or beg them, you know, in just like it says in the book, we don't, you know, we walk with our head up. And we don't bow down before anyone. We keep our head up and go. She helped me with that, and that was a pretty major thing. Accepting your children like that has been the hardest thing that has happened to me, and then the flip side is it's been the greatest thing that's happened to me. I my faith was good before, but my faith after that happened when I wasn't getting any response from them and I would continue to try and try and try, I was just devastated. And I think I was already in Benicia when that happened. And I just didn't know what else to do. There was nothing I could do except for accept God's help. Just offer it to God and let it be that way. And when I got into the book about it, it's about, you know, continue to be of service. And I ended up meeting a man that was here. Actually, he was from Benicia. And he asked me to get married, and we did. But he had two sons exactly the same age as my boys were. And we got married. And these boys came back into my life in a different form. You know, they were just, and I have to look at it kind of like that, because it was a really painful time for me, not having your kids in your life and, you know, being shunned. That, and I think a part of our disease is that we're so abandonment, you know, one more time, we're abandoned. And we feel abandoned as little kids, and then we grow up and we get abandoned, and that was a big deal. But today it's not a big deal. Today I wish them well, and if they ever come back, it'll be wonderful for me. But this is today. And this is how it is today. And I'm happy today. I think with God's help, I have, you know, and I just continue to serve and do what I'm supposed to do. That was probably one of the biggest things that gave me faith in God, knowing that God had to love me. And I had to sit in it and let it be okay. And there have been a few other, couple other big things in sobriety where I felt like I would have just been obliterated by alcohol if I had really lived through them. My birth family, they weren't terribly nice people. I mean, mom and dad were, my mom was lovely, and I love my dad, he was great. But there was some pitting that took place amongst the girls, us three girls. And my mom was dying in 2015. This still makes me really sad. So my sister lived next door, or three doors down from my mom, and so she gave her durable power of attorney for her health care. So she was right getting at the end, and I went over, and my sister, it was not a great relationship at all, and it never was great. She didn't want me there with my mom, so she had my mom move to Bruns Hospice and put me on the list that I couldn't visit her. And that broke my heart. It really did. It was one more time, you know, you're kind of like, but those are the kind of things that people do when they're alcoholic. They do bad things, and I did bad things too, but I, you know, we work on not hurting others anymore. So I had to pick up the pieces of that, and I was broken, you know, you kind of, I wasn't broken, but I knew I had where to go and what to do, but it really hurt my heart, you know. I made it through, and I came home, and I remember my husband was in China, and I called, and I was crying and crying and crying, and then I called my sponsor, and my sponsor said, "Oh, come on, Kathy, couldn't you expect any more from your sister? Of course she did that. That's what she's done to you the whole time. Why are you surprised?" And that kind of gave me, she couldn't destroy my relationship with my mom. Nobody can. Nobody can destroy my relationship with any one of us. I have the relationships in my heart, and it's been really a sweet ride. I really learned that she, you know, she's just a sick soul, and that's what sick souls do. And I have some compassion for her, and that's, you know, just how it went. That sister passed away this last year, and it's been a really hard passing for me, because of it. Just, it is what it is. You know, the other one I was going to just touch on a little bit was, I in my career as a nurse, I did oncology nursing, I did pediatric oncology nursing, and I came to realize that, you know, and a lot of the kids died, and I fell in love with every single kid. Every kid I fell in love with, the pediatrician would say, "Kathy, don't fall in love with this one because it's not going to have a good outcome." And I said, "You want to give me the instructions? How do I not fall in love with somebody?" Because I fall in love with people. I do. I try to find the space that where somebody else is coming from and just connect. And anyhow, I learned so much from that because many, many of them died, and I spoke at many, many funerals. And I realized, you know, God only put them on the earth for a short amount of time. That's all I need to know. And I need to just continue my life and go from there. And that's what I feel like I've been able to do with a lot of God's help with that. Because, you know, those kids, even the adults that pass away, people don't die. We live on forever in somebody's heart. And all of you live on in my heart forever, you know? I just need to work with kindness and love. Anyhow, I don't know why that came to my mind. Anyhow, it did. And the other one I'll just touch on a little is one of my amends I made to my other sister that's still around. And she still does a lot of drinking and a lot of smoking pot. And we had the dynamic changed between us last year when my sister, other one died, because the three of us were pretty close. And anyhow, she would explode and do all the things that we do when we drink too much. So she had, there was like 9 months that she hadn't spoken to me. So I called her. Her birthday was September 6th, just this last week. And I called her and I said, "You know, it's your birthday next week. How about I come to your house and visit you for your birthday?" And I did. And we had a magical time. It was wonderful. It was really good. And I was able to let her drink and get drunk. And she repeated the same story 5,000 times. And all those things. And she sat in the backyard and smoked pot. And it was okay. Because you know what? I love my sister. And it's not going to get in the way of anybody or anything anymore. I just like... And we had her kid over for dinner with his entourage. It was beautiful. And you know, even a year ago, I don't know if I was capable of doing that. I just think if I continue to put one foot in front of the other and continue to be available for anyone that needs help, I have to keep reaching out and doing the next right thing. I will continue to not feel like as bad as I used to feel. I love being sober. This is great. You know, it's really beautiful. I had ice cream with a young woman and her two little kids this week, and I think, why would I ever miss my kids when I have this? Yeah. You know, it's just that I have to want what I have instead of have what I want. I lived in sobriety in the beginning, probably many years, thinking, well, if I just tweak it this way or just go this, or if he would only behave, then I will be fine. No, I am fine now. I just need to accept everything exactly how it is and love God. Let God love me. So there is a, and then I'll end with this. See, there's a line in the Menninger Clinic in the East, which is, I think it's a mental hospital. It's probably not the right name of it, but anyhow. It is, love is a great medicine that heals both the physician and the patients. And that's all we have here is love. That's all. And all I can do is try to give love. And it doesn't matter how what you do. What matters is what I do. I just need to keep loving. Love, love, love. And just give it away and let it be okay. And I don't mean not make, you know, taking a stand when it's wrong. But I can learn how to do that the adult way and act like a grown-up when I'm doing it. I don't have to throw the stew like I used to do. I used to throw meals all over. I really was a mess. Anyhow, thank you for letting me share. I appreciate it.
Great job.
Thank you so much, Kathy. And we gave another hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful message of love. So, let's see. There's plenty of chicken in back. Which I do know. And whatever else is, you're welcome to that. And we generally circle.